Chapter 8. As I stride toward the elevator, I fling my bow to one side and my quiver to the other. I brush past the gaping A-boxes who guard the elevators and hit the number 12 button with my fist. The doors slide together and I zip upward. I actually make it back to my floor before the tears start running down my cheeks. I can hear the others calling me from the sitting room, but I fly down the hall into my room, bolt the door, and fling myself onto my bed. Then I really begin to sob. Now I've done it. I've ruined everything. If I even stood a ghost of a chance, it's vanished when I sent that arrow flying towards the game makers. What will they do to me? Arrest me? Execute me? Cut my tongue and turn me into an Avox so I can wait on the future tributes of Panna? What was I thinking, shooting at the game makers? Of course I wasn't. I was shooting at the apple because I was angry at being ignored. I wasn't trying to kill one of them. If I were, they'd be dead. Now what does it matter? It's not like I was going to win the games anyway. Who cares what they do to me? What really scares me, what they might do to my mother and Prim, how my family might suffer now because of my impulsiveness. Will they take their few belongings or send my mother to prison and Prim to the community home? Or kill them? They wouldn't kill them, would they? Why not? Why should they care? I should have stayed and apologized, or laughed like it was a big joke, and maybe they would have found some legacy. But instead, I stalked out of the place with the most disrespectful manner possible. Hamish and Effie are knocking on my door. I shout at them to go away, and they eventually do. It takes at least an hour for me to cry myself out. Then I lie curled up in a bed, stroking the silken sheets, watching the sunset over the artificial candy capital. At first, I expect guards to come for me. As time passes, it seems less likely. I calm down. They still need a girl tribute from District 12, don't they? If the game makers want to punish me, they can do it publicly. Wait until I'm in the arena and sick, starving wild animals on me. You can bet that they'll make sure I don't have a bow and arrow to defend myself. Before they do, they'll give me a score so low on the no one in their right mind would sponsor me. That's what will happen tonight. Since the training isn't open to viewers, the game makers announce a score for each player. It gives the audience a starting place for the betting, and it will continue throughout the games. The number which between 1 and 12 will be irredeemably bad, and 12 making it unaddably high signifies the promise of the tribute. The mark is not a guarantee which person will win. It's only an indication of what potential attribute showed in training, often because the variables in the actual arena. High-scoring tributes almost go down immediately. And a few years ago, a boy who won the games only received a 3. Still, scores can help or hurt an individual tribute in terms of sponsorship. I had been hoping my shooting skills might give me a 6 or a 7, even if I'm not particularly powerful. Now I'm sure I will have the lowest score of the 24. If no one sponsors me, my odds of staying alive decrease to almost 0. When Effie taps on the door to call me to dinner, I decide I may as well go. The scores will be televised tonight. It's not like I can hide what happened forever. I go to the bathroom and wash my face, but it's still red and splotchy. Everyone's waiting at the table, even Senna and Portia. I wish the stylists hadn't shown up because, for some reason, I don't like the idea of disappointing them, even if I've thrown away what good work they did in the opening ceremonies without a thought. I avoid looking at anyone and take tiny spoonfuls of fish soup. The saltiness reminds me of my tears. The adults begin some chit-chat about the weather forecast. I let my eyes meet Peeta's. He raises his eyebrows in a question. What happened? I give my head a small shake. Then they're serving the main course. I hear what Hamish said. Okay, enough small talk. How bad were you guys today? Peeta jumps in. I don't know that it mattered. By the time I showed up, no one even bothered to look at me. They were singing some sort of drinking song, I think. So I threw around some heavy objects before then they told me I could go. It makes me feel a bit better that it's not like Peeta attacked the game makers, though. At least he was provoked, too. And you, sweetheart, says Hamish. Somehow Hamish calling me sweetheart ticks me off. Even enough that I'm at least able to speak. I shot an arrow at the game makers. Everyone stopped seething. You what? The horror of Effie's voice conforms my worst suspicions. I shot an arrow at them, and not exactly at them, in their direction. It's like PETA. I was shooting, and they were ignoring me, and I just lost my head. So I shot an apple at their stupid roast pig's mouth. I shot an apple out of their stupid roast pig's mouth, I say defiantly. And what did they say? Says Cinna carefully. Nothing, or I don't know. I walked out after that, I say. Without being dismissed? Gasped Effie. I dismissed myself, I said. I remember how I promised Prim that I would really do what I really would try to win. I felt like a ton of coal had just dropped on me. Well, that's that, says Hamish, and he butters a roll. You don't think they'll arrest me, I say. Doubt it. It'll be a pain to replace you at this stage, says Hamish. What about my family? Will they punish them? Don't think so. Wouldn't make much sense. They would have to reveal what happened in the training center for anything worthwhile. Effect on the population, since people don't even know you did, but they can't sense it's secret. It would be a waste of effort, says Hamish. More likely, they'll make your life bad in the arena. Well, they've already promised to do that anyway, says PETA. Very true, says Hamish, and I realize the impossible has happened. They've actually cheered me up. Hamish picks up a pork chop with his fingers, which makes Effie frown, and dunks it in his wine. He rips off a hunk of meat and starts to chuckle. What were their faces like? I can feel the edges of my mouth tilting up. Shocked, terrified, ridiculous, some of them. An image pops in my mind. One man tripped backwards into a bowl of punch. Him guffaws, and we all start laughing, except Effie, although she's even suppressing a smile. Well, it serves them right. It's their job to pay attention to you, and because you're from District 12 is no excuse to ignore you. Then her eyes dart around if she said something totally outrageous. I'm sorry, but that's what I think, she says to no one in particular. I'll get a very bad score. I say, scores only matter if they're good. No one pays attention to the bad or mediocre ones. For all you know, you could be hiding your talents to get a low score on purpose. People use that strategy, says Portia. I hope that's how people interpret the four I'll probably get, says PETA. If that really anything less impressive than watching a person pick up a heavy ball and throwing it a couple of yards, one almost landed on my foot. I grin at him and realize I'm starving. I cut off a piece of pork and dunk it in mashed potatoes and start eating. It's okay, my family's safe, and if they're safe, no real harm's been done. After dinner, we go into the sitting room and watch the scores be announced on television. First, they show a photo of the tribute and then flash their score below it. The career tributes naturally get an 8 to 10 range. Most of the other players average a 5. Surprisingly, little Rue comes up with a 7. I don't know what she showed the judges, but she's so tiny, it must have been impressive. District 12 comes up last, as usual. PETA pulls an 8, and at least a couple of the game makers should have been watching him. I dig my fingers into my palms, and when my face comes up, expecting the worst, then they're flashing the number 11 on the screen. 11! Effie Trinket lets out a squeal, and everyone is slapping me on the back and cheering and congratulating me, and it doesn't seem real. There must have been a mistake. How did that happen? I ask Hamish. I guess they liked your temper, he says. They got a show to put on. They need some players with some heat. Katniss, the girl who's on fire, says Cinna and gives me a hug. Oh, wait until you see your interview drafts. More flames, I ask? Sort of, he says mischievously. Pete and I congratulate each other for an awkward moment, and then we've both done well, and it does. What does that mean for the other? I skate to my room as quickly as possible and bury down in the covers. The stress of the day, particularly the crying, has worn me out. I drift off and relieved, with the number 11 still flashing behind my eyelids. As dawn, I lie in bed for a while, watching the sun come up in the beautiful morning. It's Sunday, a day off at home, and I wonder if Gail's in the woods yet. Usually we devote all Sunday to stocking up for the week. Rising early, hunting and gathering and trading at the hob. I think of Gail without me. Probably both of us can hunt alone, but we're better as a pair, particularly for trying for bigger game. But also in littler things, we have having a partner lightened the load. It could make the more arduous task of filling my family's table enjoyable. I've been struggling along for about 6 months when I first ran into Gale in the woods. It was Sunday in October. The cool air and the pungent with dying things. I spent the morning competing with the squirrels for nuts and slightly warmer in the shallow ponds harvesting catnips. The only meat I've ever shot was a squirrel, and I particularly run over my toes on its quest for acorns. But the animals would still be afoot when the snow buried my other food sources. Having strayed farther afield than usual, I was hurrying back home, lugging my burlap sacks, when I came across a dead rabbit. It was hanging by its neck in a thin wire a foot above my head, and about 15 yards was another. I recognized the twitch-up snares that my father had used them. That when the prey is caught, it's yanked into the air to reach out of hungry animals. I've been trying to use snares all summer with no success, so I couldn't help jockeying my sacks to examine this one. My fingers were just on the wire when the rabbits, when a voice rang out, "That's dangerous!" I jumped back several feet as Gale materialized behind a tree. He must have been watching me the whole time. He was only 14, but he cleared 6 feet and was good enough to an adult as me. I've seen him around the scene and at school. One time he had lost his father in the same blast that killed mine. In January, I stood by while he received his medal and valor in the Justice Building, another oldest child with no father. I remembered his two little brothers clutching his mother, a woman whose swollen belly announced she was just days away from giving birth. "What's your name?" he said, coming over and disgaggling the rabbit from the snare. He had another three hanging from his belt. "Katniss," I said, barely audible. "Well, catnip, stealing's punishable by death, haven't you heard?" he said. "Katniss," I said louder. "I wasn't stealing. I wanted to look at your snare. Mine never catch anything." He scowled at me, not convinced. "So where'd you get the squirrel?" "I shot it," I said, pulling the bow off my shoulder. I was still using the small version my father had made, but I'd been practicing with full-size one when I could, hoping that it might spring. I maybe bring down some bigger game. Gale's eyes fastened on the bow. "Can I see that?" I handed it over. "Just remember, stealing's punishable by the law." It was the first time I ever saw him smile. He transformed to someone menacing to someone you wish you knew. It took several months before I returned that smile. We talked hunting then, and he might be able to get a bow if he had something to trade. Not food. I wanted knowledge. I wanted to set my own snares and get caught a belt of fat rabbits for one day. He agreed something might be worked out, and then as the seasons went by, we gradually began to share our knowledge, our weapons, our secret places were thick with wild plums or turkeys. He taught me snares and fishing. I showed him what plants to eat, and eventually gave him one of our precious bows. And then one day, without either of us saying it, we became a team, dividing the work and spoils, making sure both of our families had food. Gale gave me a sense of security that I'd lacked since my father's death. His companionship replaced the long solitary hours in the woods. I became a much better hunter when I didn't have to look over my shoulder constantly when someone was watching my back. But then he turned into so much more than a hunting partner. He became my confidant, someone who whom I could share thoughts. Someone whom I could never voice inside the fence. In exchange, he trusted me with his. Being out in the woods with Gale, sometimes I was actually happy. I call him my friend, but last year it seemed too casual a word for Gale and me. A pang of longing shoots through my chest. If only he was with me now. But of course, I don't want that. I don't want him in the arena where he'd be dead in just a few days. I just miss him, and I hate being so alone. Does he miss me? I think of the 11 flashing under my name last night. I know exactly what he said to me. Well, there's some room for improvement there. And then he gave me a smile, and I'd return it without hesitating now. I can't help comparing what I have with Gale to I'm pretending to have with PETA. How I can never question Gale's motives. Well, I do nothing but doubt the latter's. It's not fair comparison, really. Gale and I were thrown together by mutual need to survive. PETA and I know each other's survival means our own death. How will you sidestep that? Effie's knocking at the door, reminding me that there's another big day ahead. Tomorrow night will be our televised interviews. I guess that the whole team will have their hands full getting us ready for that. I get up and take a quick shower, being a bit more careful about the buttons I hit and the head shower that's dimming the room. PETA, Effie, and Hamish are huddled together at the table talking in hushed voices. That seems odd, but the hunger wins out over my curiosity, and I load up my plate with breakfast before I join them. The stew's made with tender chunks of lamb and dried plums today, perfect with the bed of wild rice. I shoveled about halfway through my mouth until I realized no one's talking. I take a big gulp of orange juice and wipe down my mouth. So, what's going on? You're coaching us on our interviews today, right? That's right, says Hamish. You don't wait until I'm done. You can listen. I can eat, listen, and eat at the same time. Well, there's been a change in plans about our current approach, says Hamish. What's that? I'm not sure what our current approach is. Trying to appear medical in front of the other tributes, and the last is the last bit of strategy I remember. Hamish shrugs. PETA has asked to be coached separately.